Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday evening, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Your hosts for tonight's show are Robert Brining and Jeremy Dunn. They'll be taking your calls and speaking on the topic of the week. You're encouraged to call in and share some of your life experiences with us. The number to call is 347-215-9442. That number again, 347-215-9442. Welcome to Pause I Am Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Pause I Am Radio. I am your host, Robert Brining, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jeremy Dunn. Jeremy, how are you making out today, man?
I'm just peachy. Can you hear me?
Good. Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, because it told me I had to, like, press one or wait on hold or something.
Yeah, I think I was a minute. I was a couple seconds behind, so.
Geez, you know, it's like you're gone for a month and the whole place just changes on you.
So welcome back. How are you feeling?
Yes. Well, I'm feeling better. I will say that. I feel a lot better. I had the flu all week last week, and I think I'm like the second or third actual documented case of the flu that my doctor actually had. So I was on Tamiflu all week, and they also gave me an awesome cough medicine called Tucinex. Oh, yeah. It had hydrocodone in it. I didn't know that. God, I felt like Rush Limbaugh.
Woo!
but feeling a lot better. I mean, I didn't really get up and out until, like, yesterday afternoon. But I was on the couch. I was just dead. The flu just knocked me out. So, and then we'll talk about the other in a little bit. So,
okay.
But everything else is going well.
Good, good. Well, I just wanted to welcome you back. For people who don't know, if your first time tuning in, Jeremy was MIA, feeling a little under the weather for the last 3 weeks. So it's his first show back. So I'm kind of excited. Kind of weird how everything fell that you ended up, getting a little sick, and Joshua just happened to be just starting to do the shows because he does the show with me on Wednesdays now. So it was kind of interesting that he was able to fill in for you. It just like everything fell at the right moment.
I have a confession, Rob. I actually made Josh do it. I'm kidding. No, I didn't. No, I was for about 2 weeks there. I was just not feeling anything, and then I got hit with the flu, and it was just, oh, God.
Well, it's cool for me.
Ugh.
Well, I'm just glad you feel better, that's the most important thing.
I'm glad I feel better, too.
Well, you took off the whole week for work and everything, didn't you?
Yeah, I actually spent a whole week at home on the couch, didn't really move. I slept most of the week away. And, that's what I needed, but I couldn't get up. I sounded miserable. I felt miserable. Everything hurt. If anybody is, those people who are listening, the flu sucks. That's all I have to tell you. It sucks.
Yeah, I had a little sickness after Christmas, and the best thing for me was just to lay and not move. So I totally understand. There was like a dent in my couch when I was done.
Oh, yeah. I've got a big, my poor couch. It sucked.
Well, just so if people are out there listening for the first time, I just want to fill you in that we now have the Pause AM Radio on 2 times a week. We have it now on Wednesday afternoons at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And next Tuesday we have Project Runaway's Jack McEnroe. Interview, if you've seen him on Project Runaway. So you can call in and ask questions if you want, and, here me and Joshua is actually going to interview him because he was available on that day, so that worked out pretty well.
So did you book it through his agent and everything?
No, he was sweet. He actually, he's just a normal, down-to-earth guy, so I kind of look forward to it. I think it's kind of, you know, he's kind of someone you can admire to go out there and put your face out there and not worry about it.
Well, of course, I have to work, and I'll be in, like, some meeting, most likely, on Wednesday at 2, so I'll be thinking about you guys.
Well, there'll be an archive that you can always catch, and if everything goes well, we can probably always get them back on again if we had to.
And try to
do it on a Sunday, because actually I want to rotate, two times a week. So one show I kind of want to have a topic for, or have it be an open mic, and then the other one be an interview. So I'm going to be looking for, some different people to interview. So I was hoping we could get, what'd you say?
I said to do stuff.
Yeah, kind of interview some different people and hear, who's out there, making a difference in the world. There's a lot of people I know that come to mind. I'm sure we could have Bob back on the show again, since you missed when we interviewed him, too.
Yeah, Bob ignores me.
That's funny. So I just want to remind everybody that the show again is Wednesdays. Some interesting stuff happened here. What's new with me is I actually went to the doctors, my infectious disease doctor down in Center City last week on Friday, and I was like, I had to go. It was my normal, every 3 months I go and I get checked out, and they do blood and blah, blah, blah. And I went back, and for the first time, my viral load actually went up. I went from around, I want to say it was around like 3,000, and it went up to 22,000.
Mm-hmm.
But my CD4 count is around 450, and it's kind of steady at 450. So the doctor is, he's thinking, it could be, just that bit of blood that you took that day, or, how your numbers kind of go up and down.
Right.
He goes, because other than that, I'm pretty steady with my numbers. And he's like, just get another, we'll do another one, and we'll see where it stands. So I have to go back down next week to go and get more blood taken, just to see how my blood work turns out. But it was kind of, I enjoy going down and seeing those people, and I don't know, I just kind of feel like there's a connection there.
Yeah, there's a connection there when they stick a 16-gauge needle into your, your vein and then drain you dry.
Going down with my doctor and going to there and just seeing him and talking to him, it just kind of makes me feel good.
Aw, that's
good.
To get
it all out.
Yeah, I like my doctor, too.
He wants to start me on meds again, and... Huh? He goes, I know you took the triple and had the reaction, but, we can start you on something else. And I'm like, all right, well, I think it's time. I'm all for it. I don't care. And he turned around and he goes, I'm hoping, there's a good chance that it was the cystiva that you were allergic to in the triple. He goes, but with the one pill, and three things in it, it could have been anything, any of the three. So he's like, well, just pray that it's the cystiva. So I'm kind of like, oh, great. That's what I need. another chance of that. But hopefully,
well, cystiva is a hard drug to get around.
In meds.
It's just, it's the only drug that crosses the blood-brain barrier. It's crazy. It does. It can make you anxious and stuff, and so
not fun.
No, it really isn't though.
So I was able to that's at least an update. And the cool thing is I went down there. Remember, I told you I did that story for that Get Real Philly.
Uh huh.
That I read, and I actually went down there, and they had a whole stack of my story pamphlets there, with a couple other ones from, the whole program itself. But it was just really cool because I saw people picking them up and reading them. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. They're reading my story.
Good.
The cool thing, I lost a pound and a half. So I don't know if that's exciting or not, but I lost a pound and a half.
Well, you lost a pound and a half?
Yeah,
the last two times I've been to the doctor, I've been 200 pounds. I've never been 200 pounds, ever, in my life. I stood up on that scale, and it's 200 even. It's scary.
Now, Is that for, now the medications, you know, put on weight, is that right?
Well, the medications don't put weight on.
Well,
no.
They don't put it on, but I mean they, how do I want
it's
to say
called,
it?
I'm opening my mouth and putting food in. and I'm not exercising as much as I used to.
I hear you on that.
It goes, you know, there's a lot to do with that, you know. I think the most workout I've had, especially this week, is going from the couch to the bathroom and back to the couch again.
And sometimes you hit the fridge in between.
Oh, well, you know what? I didn't eat much at all. The flu, I just had no appetite. So
chicken soup, right?
I actually just did some chicken broth, and I would heat that up in a mug and sip on it because I just wasn't hungry. So, it was just forcing myself to eat something and to make sure that I was eating, because I had a 100-and-some-degree fever all week that didn't break until Thursday night, and it was just it was miserable. But one of the other, and so we'll just jump right in. It's 11 after. I've blogged about it. It's actually on my blog, and one of the other reasons why I was gone for a couple weeks is because I had some troubling blood work that came through, and I am in. Rob, you know this. I'm co-infected with hepatitis C and HIV, and so when I go to the doctor, they literally, you know, it's like I get off of that thing, and that's, you know, I'm like weak in the knees because I've taken so much blood because there's so many tests that they have to do.
Right.
And so it was my normal test, normal blah blah blah, and my liver enzymes came back that were highly elevated. So we found out that my ALT, which is one of the enzymes, I can't pronounce the whole thing. It's just a big, long blah, blah, blah. Anyway, there's two that they look at. It's the ALT and the AST. And as you're listening to this, you can go on to and Google it, and it will tell you exactly what it is. But the ALT is normal range is between 8 and 55. Mine was 433 or something like that, 422 or something. And the AST should be between 4 and 40, and that one came back at 163. So I get this call from my doctor. He says, "I'm concerned. Get in here now." So I go in the very next day. I go in the next day. They pull more blood. I get no results until almost 10 days later. So I am, like, freaking out the whole week. You know, it's like I'm a mess of anxiety because I have no idea what's happening. Because every time here's the worst thing that anybody could ever do is go online after you get a blood result before talking to your doctor. Worst thing ever. Internet, yeah. Bad, bad, bad. So, I'm looking at it and everything that I was reading was, oh, well, it's a liver damage caused by, and then it lists off, you know, three or four horrible, horrible things that it could be. You know, liver cancer, you know, all these horrible things that it might be. So, you know, I'm going through my head going, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. And really, does it not register in my head that, duh, Jeremy, you have hepatitis C, that could be causing some of these levels to go whacked out. And sure enough, 10 days later, I find out that my Hep B viral load had spiked. It's starting to become a little bit more active. So the Hep C viral load went from around 5,225, I think is what it was, 5,225 copies, all the way up to 295,000. So that caused my liver, my enzymes to go freaky.
Wow.
So that's my story. That's what's been going on. It's been, you know, it's been some anxious moments in the Jeremy household, the Mark and Jeremy household. So it's like, you know, I burst into tears thinking, oh, my God, you know, this is it. Oh, God. You know what? But it isn't it yet. I've got many more it's to go, I think. So the deal now is that we're going to take a much closer look at my liver bloods at the same time that we do the HIV bloods. So because there could be a point where I will have to go on to make the decision to go and do hepatitis C treatment, which is not going to be fun. It's I think it's a 48-week course of treatment, and people with HIV, it's I think it's only 30 or 40% successful. So the success rate isn't that great. So I have to weigh those, the option of, you know, do I just deal with it and make some lifestyle choices and, you know, and to change, you know, diet and exercise and complete cessation of alcohol altogether. No beer, no wine, nothing, you know, and deal with it that way, or do I decide, you know, do I roll the dice and take a chance? So big decision is looming out there in the next few months or a year or two, I don't know. So that's what's been going on in my world.
Well, you've been busy.
Just a little. So,
well, I hope everything works out for you.
You know, I hope it does too, obviously. But so it's, you know, and you know, the whole Hep C thing is a little bothersome. So, mind you, I haven't had any alcohol since I got the labs back. So, which is fine. I mean, not like I, you know, drink heavily, but.
Just Sunday mornings, brunch.
Exactly. <right? laughs> That's right. No more than I drink at brunch. So I went and I bought some O'Doul's, you know, the non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah.
I think it's got like less, each 12-ounce bottle contains less than 0.5% alcohol, which is nothing.
Right.
So it's, I can actually have a beer when other people are and it's a little healthier for me.
That's cool. So, most places, if you go out to eat, usually carry them anyway.
I am surprised at how many do not.
Really?
We've been gone to 4 places this week, and only one of them had it.
Oh, I'm really surprised. Maybe just the place that I worked at had it. And I just assumed, it was the only restaurant I worked at, I just assumed that everyone carried a non-alcoholic beer.
No. Nope. You would think, you know, you would think, but yeah, no, yeah, it, just.
Because I know my cousin, when he was going to AA meetings and stuff like that, he would drink the O'Doul's. Like, we'd pick it up, or what was the other one called? Paps, or I forget the name of it.
Yeah, you know, I've been doing a little bit of research, and I went on to, what was it? It was the American Liver Association's website, and the doctors that are on their message boards there say, you know what, have an O'Doul, it's fine. Just don't do anything, you know, because it's going to be okay. So,
right.
You know, if you want that, have it. Don't do the one, but, you know, steer clear of, you know, the wine and, you know, of course, the heavier liquors. No rums, no vodkas, no gin, none of that. And there's also milk, thistle, which is a herbal, but because of my HIV medicine, I can't take that. So, because it causes the HIV med not to be absorbed as well as it should. So there's, you know, there's all kinds of things, especially, you know, if you're HIV positive, you have a whole host of things that you have to deal with. And then when you add the hepatitis on top of that, there's a whole other set of problems and issues and things that you have to juggle. So.
Yeah, that's a pretty good topic. We should do a show one day on co-infection.
Oh, man, we can go on and on about that.
Yeah, I think that'll be kind of resourceful because a lot of people, you know, like you said, are co-infected.
Yeah,
you know?
there's a ton of people out there that are co-infected, and it makes treatment options difficult because a lot of one thing that I might have to do is change my HIV regimen, because again, Sestiva, we were just talking about this. Sestiva is really hard on the liver.
Right.
So it's maybe finding something that's not as hard on the liver, to take. So I have lots of options in front of me and, just lots of decision making. You know, what's going to work best for me at this point? So.
Sounds good to me. Some member news actually going on. As you all know, some people may be listening for the first time. PosIAM Radio is a part of the PosIAM community. And one of the members that we have actually was on CNN last night, Marvelyn Brown. I was able to catch it, her interview, because I just became aware of this actually last year, that February 7th is African American World AIDS Day. And I didn't know that. Did you, Jeremy?
I did not know that either.
I heard of it last year and I posted something on the site, and people would, you know, one guy from Philly, he's an African American guy, and he turned around and said that he didn't even know about it. And this is what they had. They had her on because she has the book, The Naked Truth, and then there was two other guys on that we're talking about who run AIDS organizations in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about how now, you know, AIDS and HIV, when it was first, you know, came out, it was known as the gay disease. And now they say, I'm quoting them, in 2009, it's not the gay disease anymore. They consider it a black disease. Because they said
I would say that's a true statement.
Yeah. I was just saying that they were saying that.
Yeah, and what they're seeing is that the rate of infection, in the black community is a lot higher than it is in the other communities. I would say they also see both the black community and the Hispanic communities kind of have a mirror infection rate,
right,
per capita. So they're seeing that those two communities have a higher infection rate than that of the Caucasian community. So there is some truth to that.
The reason that, like, they, you know, had her on and they were doing things like that is they were speaking about how, you know, back when it first came about, that the gay community was able to pull themselves together and kind of diminish the whole "this is a gay disease," and they were, you know, trying to figure out and point out leaders like, you know, Marvelyn Brown, who go out there and speak, who are African American, that they can go out and change the way that it's viewed as a black disease now to just a human race disease, which, you know, it is.
Well, and I think also in the black community, you have you're battling a couple of things. You're battling a big culture obstacle because black men aren't gay, and you know what I mean. You have men that have sex with men, but a lot of them do not identify as gay. So you have men who are having sex with men who are also going home and having sex with their wives, but they don't identify themselves as gay. So there's that whole thing there. And, of course, when you go into communities that have higher poverty rate, you're going to also see infections a lot higher as well.
Right. Well, I just wanted to bring that up. I didn't know about that National Day, and it was kind of interesting to bring up because a lot of people don't.
Yeah, I didn't know about that day either. I do know that here in Charlotte, at the Johnson C. Smith University, which is primarily African American, it's a primarily African American university. As a matter of fact, it was founded specifically for African Americans who were being released and becoming free men at the time in the late 1800s. They started offering on Friday. They started offering free syphilis and HIV tests to their whole student body. So, and they're going to continue that throughout the year.
That's great.
So, there's a lot going on, I think, across the country, but it's really rethinking this whole disease.
Well, you have to rethink your whole life after you're diagnosed, so.
Well, it's not just that, but, it's the disease itself, you know, on how people perceive it. Speaking from a more global standpoint of, it's a disease first, and as they're looking at risk factors and things like that, the statistics, the data doesn't lie, you know, so in that respect. So if you look at it just from a data standpoint, then it's like, holy cow. And then when you start really peeling back the covers and you start looking at risk factors and you start looking at demographic, then a more solid story starts to be starts to unfold. So it's an interesting thing at this point.
One of the things I wanted to mention is we have a member by the name of Anthony on the site, and he called in I think two or three shows ago and had a pretty long discussion with me, and he's pretty inspirational guy. He's from Ohio. And he went to a leadership summit, which took place, in Ohio, but he's from Columbus. And it was basically people who are 18 to 30 who want to try to step into a leadership role to raise awareness of HIV and AIDS, to come together, all people who are, you know, infected with the disease. And they made like a 6-minute video, not a video, an audio CD of them making comments and feelings about being positive. And the audio itself is for kids between 18 to 24 years old. So these are young people who are infected this disease, and I actually downloaded it so I could play it for you guys so you could all listen to it. And then after this is done, I'd like for you all to call in and tell me a little bit about what you hear on this audio, because it's very, very, it's very touching, and it's it makes you think. The audio itself is called We Are Still Here. So I'm going to play that for you, and then you can call in. The number to call in afterwards is 347-215-9442.
I'm 18 years old.
I'm 22. When I found out, I was 19.
I'm 25 years old.
I was at 18 when I became positive.
I'm 23. I've been affected since I was 22. In my area, I think that I'm the only one that I know of. I'm sure there's more, but it's like social suicide to say I'm positive. I'd probably end up dead.
In my head, like I have a parasite that's going to eat away at my body until there's no more left of me.
Part of the emotions went through, like it was guilt, like maybe I deserve this, or maybe what would have happened if I hadn't done that, or what would happen if my father was in my life. Just so many things went through my mind, anger and wrath. I just wanted to like take people's heads off or holding somebody else's hand. Like, that's not fair, because now nobody's ever gonna want to touch me again.
I had that guilt that I allowed someone to sentence me to death, and the hardest thing has been telling my mom that I have HIV, because it was like telling the person that gave me life, gave me birth, that I was now dying.
When I'm with my friends, stuff like that, I'm jealous of them because they don't have anything, so they can date anybody they want to. I'm closed up because I can't date nobody like I want to. Like, I'm still ashamed of it, even after all these years. I'm still ashamed of it.
He never told me. In an initial thought, I'm like, okay, how can someone make the decision for me to take my life in their hands? All you had to do was say, I'm HIV positive, and you should be smart enough to say, okay, we need to use the proper procedure to protect ourselves from each other. And I just felt very betrayed and very angry and hurtful, and wanted to just do anything, because it was not your decision to make that for me.
My biggest fear is loneliness, and then it seemed like as soon as I thought I had, was gonna get out of that lonely, state, it was like, bam, now you have HIV, now nobody's ever gonna want to touch you, or you're never gonna get that kiss, or nobody's gonna wanna give you a hug, or, it was like I'm back to that loneliness again.
Now, now who I talk to? No one, because no one's wanting to listen.
As soon as I tell people about my status, they stop calling, stop coming around.
And I keep myself close up in my room and away from everybody. And then I just sit and sometimes I cry because I'm like, wow, like, if only I was negative.
Like, I'm so afraid of dying. Like, that's just like my biggest fear.
Dying before my mother, it was just a big... I just felt like it was just a big disappointment for my mom.
If I had the chance to say something to the whole world, it's like, I just want to stop the stereotype. We all hurting in some way. Some are hurting from 9/11. Some are hurting from abuse. And some are hurting with HIV. We just need to stand up and speak out for ourselves. Stop blaming everything on others. Take stuff for yourself. We all need to fall back in love with ourselves.
And I think what people need to know is that I had issues before I had HIV, and I have issues after. I have friends before and I have friends after. I had a life before and I have a life after. The worst part for me about having HIV is just the fact knowing that it's there. If I didn't know, I would just be living my life. But now that I know, it's only thing that's changed the fact that I know. It's not a good thing, but it's not as bad as it seems.
But I tell people I'm healthy. All these years I have not been on medicine. I've even been undetected one time. I have to tell people, like, I still do what I do, I still go out and dance, have a good time. I still jump around and act like a kid sometimes. I'm still me. I'm still who you met before, They don't understand that. They just, you got HIV, I don't even want to talk to you.
I'm one of those prime examples where I feel like it has changed me, changed my outlook, empowered me, gave me strength, gave me faith, and gave me hope. And I'm one of those examples of where family support and having friends, surrounding yourself around positive people, can really influence you and make you believe things that you may have thought not was possible.
When I do leave this place, I want people to remember me as Tracy, not for the virus that I have. As Tracy. Tracy for making people laugh. Tracy for, he can cook good, dress good. That's why I want people to remember me.
You can still live a healthy life. You can still, you know, have fun. You can still go out and do what you want to do. It's not the end of the world, as a lot of times we see it being. I think that would help. And I think if we could show, as we're doing this weekend, that there are young people who, you know, still got it going on and still cute and still got a job, still going to college. We still have goals. For me, it's more of a determination to reach those goals now. I don't know. I just think if we could just get that out there, get that point across that nothing is not attainable anymore just because we found this out. If anything, we're stronger now because we're still here.
And that's the end of that. What do you think of that, Jeremy?
Well, I where is it from again?
It was in Ohio, and it was a leadership summit, and it was just a group of people who are infected with HIV, 18 to 30 years old, who met in Ohio.
But where did you get soundbite from?
I got it from, one of the members of the site, Anthony, sent it to me in the mail.
Oh, he sent it to you in the mail. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What I would like to know is, because in what's their socioeconomic status? Are they getting onto meds? Are they getting treatment? I wanted to hear a little bit more of that because what I'm hearing is that we're going to hide in our room. Nobody loves us. Everybody's turning away from us. And these were all African-Americans, right?
They weren't.
What?
No.
So who was in this panel?
It was a group of 18 to 24-year-olds who were there.
But what was the demographic that made them up?
All I know is that it's from the Ohio AIDS Coalition. And it was a positive leadership summit for young adults. And this actually took place in 2007, but the CD was made in 2007, The Voices. But he got it from another summit in Ohio for this year.
Uh-huh. So you don't know if they were all African-American, Hispanic, or white?
I'm going to say that I don't know.
Okay. And, not knowing more, it's the same thing that you hear everywhere you go when somebody finds out that they're HIV positive. We hear the same stories over and over and over again, only coming out of somebody else's mouth. It's sad. But it's reality. And what I would be interested in is getting more to the root of some of these feelings that they were expressing. That somebody's afraid to tell their mom. I was terrified of telling my mother, not knowing where to go, not knowing what to do. And of course I was 30 when I found out. So
right.
I was a lot older. But these are kids who are starting their lives, supposed to be starting their lives. And
the reason I played it is because I read the stories. I personally don't go to a lot of places where I hear people speak about HIV. So
mm-hmm.
for me to hear somebody, else talk about it, and put their voice out there and share a little bit of themselves. That's kind of why, like, I wanted to play it because it's good. When I heard it, I felt a little bit too much on the negative side, but they were the ranges of emotions that I went through when I was first positive, you know, afraid to tell your mom, afraid you could never hug or kiss anyone, or you're not going to be able to date whoever you want because you have it. And,
yep.
And at the end of it, you know, the last kid was like, you know, I'm empowered, you know, I want to do something different, you know, and I think it was cool how it went from being in that dark tunnel that you feel at your first diagnosis and then at the end being like, you know what, I'm going to be the light at this tunnel. And that's why I wanted to play, just to, you know, inspire you all. And if you all are listening and want to call in about what you heard, I just want to throw that number back out to you. 347-215-9442. You can give us a call. But you know, it was kind of cool because I don't know if at 18 to 24 if I would be able to sit down and talk a little bit about,
you know,
myself.
I think what's inspiring about all of them is that they had the courage to actually speak, to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
When you are, let me rephrase, when I was 18 and I was young and full of piss and vinegar, if you will, no one could tell me that 20 years later that something was going to happen. But to be 18 and to get that diagnosis and to now, your life does truly change at that point. You've got a couple of different ways to go. You can go, you know, like a couple of the guys did and say, you know what, I'm just going to hide off in my room. I'm going to shut everything out, you know, because nobody's going to want me. Nobody's going to, you know, you can go down that path, or you can go down the path that the other guy, that the last guy said, and said, you know, I'm empowered now. I want to go do something with this. I want to, you know. So, and I think those are all really good examples of why I think you and I do what we do.
Right.
Because it's, you know what? You know what? There are other people just like you out in the world. And sometimes it takes a little bit of looking and picking up the rocks to look. But there are people out there in the world. But There's a lot of variables in all of that. It's, you know, upbringing. It's, you know, your family. It's your neighborhood that you grew up in. School or lack of schooling. So there's a lot that plays into these things because. You will, you know, I can go to three blocks down, and I can hear a mother screaming at her son saying, you'll never be anything more than your father was. You're just never going to be that. So give it up now. You're never going to college. You're never doing this. So, you know, and I hate to focus on the negative, but when someone is told that and presented that constantly, I can understand some of those feelings. It's not easy to break out of that particular mold when those are reinforced time and time again.
I just love hearing people's feelings, you know, no matter what they're going through, just to hear somebody else put their feelings out there is
absolutely,
you know, relatable. But
you know,
I think my favorite part of the whole thing was the one kid said that we have to learn how to fall back in love with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like so important because for the longest time I didn't love myself. And it's so important for you to love yourself. If you don't love yourself, nobody's going to ever love you.
Right.
And it's so key.
You know, it's what Shakespeare wrote, to thine own self be true. You know, it's you have to be true to yourself first. But again, you know, there's a lot of pressures out there, and depending on where you're at in life and what's going on around you, because a lot of it is, a lot of it is nature and a lot of it is nurture. So it depends on how you were brought up is how you're going to look at yourself, right?
Right.
I mean, quite honestly. So if you never had any self-respect for yourself to begin with, and you never did like yourself, really, and you never did fall in love with yourself, how can you do it again? So it's, you know, that's why these kids need positive role models.
And the best thing is that they call it "We Are Still Here," and, you know, that's that's what we're trying to tell and tell people by doing this show, that we are still here and we're living and you know, putting good out there and doing things to make us feel better. One story that came up, that came across, you know, that happened to me lately is some of my family know. I'm pretty out to most of my family. If you ask me anything, I'll be honest with you. I don't have anything to hide anymore. I'm not, you know, insecure like I was before. And, you know, my cousin, he's maybe 27 years old. He just got married. And he was talking to me on Facebook because we're on there all the time. And he's like, "I heard you have a website. What's it about?" Well, I wasn't going to lie to him. And I was like, "Well, I'm HIV positive, in case you didn't know," which he didn't know. He had no idea. And it's a site, you know, similar. It's a social networking site to meet people that are, you know, HIV positive or affected by the disease. And he's like, well, he was speechless. And this is why I do this. This is why, you know, Jeremy, we go out and we do the show to teach people things. Is he turned around and you know what he said to me? "Oh, so you're like Magic Johnson?" This is what he IM'd me, right? And I laughed, right? And I laugh and I just go like, yeah, whatever. Like Magic Johnson. And he's like,
"No, Magic
okay.
Johnson doesn't have it anymore, remember?"
So he's like, "You almost gave me a heart attack. I thought you were going to die." And I'm like, and then I had to explain to him that, like, people live long, you know, time on meds, and I'm not even on meds yet, and I still, you know. And then I explained to him, like, people who've been on meds for years, like Bob Bowers, and he was just like, he was kind of left speechless. But to me, he's 27 years old. I think he was raised in a pretty good family, you know, and he really knew nothing about it. He don't know anything about it.
Remember, just because you had a good family doesn't mean that you have to talk about the real things that exist in the world.
Very true. Very true.
You know, I had a good family, but we didn't talk about sex.
Yeah, me either.
We didn't talk about HIV and AIDS. We didn't talk about it. Because in my family, it didn't exist in my family. So why talk about it?
Or being gay, that didn't exist either.
Right. So there are... There's, you know, you might come from the, and I hate to say this, but the best of families, right? Where it's that typical nuclear family that you have the mother and the father and the 2.5 children, and you've got the dogs and the cats, and you've got everything, and everybody loves everybody, and everybody, you know, they hang their artwork on the refrigerator, but the minute something real happens, that nuclear family breaks apart because they don't know how to deal with reality, because we're not faced with reality. We live in a digital world. We live in this world where I'm on a computer, I watch TV. That's where the information is coming to kids these days. Not from the parents. So when kids have questions about their own sexuality or HIV or something else, parents don't know how to address it. Because
I looked for it
their
online.
Parents did, you know, and their parents didn't know how to address it. Their parents didn't know how. So it's a continuous, it's this cycle that is constantly being, you know, over and over and over again, because we're not taking the responsibility and educating our children about it.
And you can't be afraid to talk about real issues.
No,
you
can't. We have to. You have to be honest about it. You have to be. And you can't just say, well, here's a pamphlet, read about it. You can't say, go on to, you know, go to the cdc.gov and read about it. Discuss it, you know, talk about it. Deal with fact and not emotion. And that's where a lot of us get caught up. We get caught up in this emotional, you know, thing when we're trying to, when we talk about something, and we so rarely stick to the facts, we, you know, and stick to the data. We get so emotionally caught up in it. It's like, well, no kid of mine is going to come down with HIV, so why do I need to talk about it? No kid of mine is going to, but, yeah, but.
There's always that big
kid,
but.
That kid of yours is not going to be living with you forever. That kid of yours is going to get out into the real world and find out that, you know what? They didn't know everything there is to know. They didn't know how to deal with some of these situations because nobody talked to them about it.
Well, hopefully, you know, I mean, people need to, I mean, it's the most important thing, and the parents, you know, of course get most of the blame, but I don't know. It's just, we need to talk about it more. And again, that's why we do this. And that's why people go around and do speaking engagements to schools
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. It's important because not every parent's going to talk about it, because some parents don't know how to talk about, you know, sex and things like that, because they just don't know how to talk about it. Nobody talked to them about it, you know, like you were saying.
Right. And when you do go to speaking engagements, like me, for example, go to one in here, North Carolina, there are certain things I can't even say.
Right.
Because you're at a public school. You can't talk about sex. You can't say the word.
And that's where it's ridiculous. You know what I mean? How are you going to preach about it and not be able to use all the facts?
So you're caught in this catch-22. It's like, okay, you know, the only way you're never going to get HIV is abstinence, and that's the only thing you're allowed to talk about is abstinence, abstinence, abstinence. Now, hopefully, thank God, that Barack Obama is going to change that, although the Republicans did take out the $400 million earmarked for HIV education and prevention out of the stimulus bill, but hey, yeah, oh yeah. Yep.
I didn't hear about that. That's a little ridiculous.
They took it out.
Of all the things, did they take out anything else or just that?
Oh, no, they took out a whole bunch of stuff.
Because they should have took out all those cars and crap for the friggin' government official, you know, cars and government cars for them.
Mm-hmm.
That crap all needs to come out. That's not important. I drive a car to work. You drive a car to work. Everybody should drive their own car. I'm sure they get paid. I'm sure they get paid enough. That they don't, you know what I mean? They don't need a free car to come work for the government or for anything like that.
Of course you
ridiculous.
Do. Gosh.
What'd you say?
Perks. I said, of course you do. Those are the perks, right?
Oh, my. So we're winding down to the last 5 minutes. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. I know the Grammys are on, so some people may be watching the Grammys and stuff like that. I want to remind you all that we are now also on air on Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Next Wednesday we have Project Runway's Jack McEnroth. He is an athlete, a designer, and an advocate. It should be pretty interesting. Try to tune in for that. You can learn more about me at posim.com and Jeremy at positivelyspeaking.com. Jeremy, any final words? I'm going to play a song to play us out so we can skip out 5 minutes early.
You're so so funny. You want to go watch the Grammys, don't you?
I want to go watch that. Actually, Sunday, this is like the worst time because Joe and me are addicted to Desperate Housewives, and it's on right now. So every Sunday, we have to tape it.
That's funny.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Very funny.
Any final words for you?
Just come see the site at www.positivelyspeaking.com. That's positively with a Z. Check it out.
And Jeremy, welcome back, man.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
Yeah, right. See you guys on the Wednesday.
All right. Have a good show. Bye, everybody.
Just the hurt that you hide.